This is number 0006, the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's radio that doesn't fly through the air. Coming from your computer and right into your ear, it's the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Welcome to another edition of the Stuff File Podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0006. And coming up on this edition of the podcast, we talk to one of the stars of the television series Glee. Her name is Naya Rivera, and she, along with the rest of the cast, aren't really surprised that the show on Fox has become a hit.
We were so excited about the project, and every week getting the scripts and reading the storylines, we knew that we had something special, and we had a good feeling about it. And so we expected it to be kind of the hit that it is now, and it's just really good to know that everyone else enjoys it just as much as we enjoy working on it.
We also talked to the multi-talented, multifaceted Steve Truitt, who is the author of Stop Waiting for Permission. And there are many reasons why he wrote the book. Here's one of them.
I was sitting in a restaurant with a friend of mine, and he's a screenwriter. We live in Hollywood. And he just kept saying, I'm waiting for someone to hire me. No one wants to hire me. He wrote one movie and then didn't hear from anybody after that. And I remember saying to him, listen, you can't wait for people to come to you. You have to start writing stuff and sending it out there. And that was really the first conversation that got me going on writing the book.
We also have the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
No, I will not click here to continue reading. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. It's coming up later on, right here on the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
Plus, we have lots and lots and lots and lots of stuff, including an idiot of the day. So stick around for all of that on this, the sixth edition of the Stuff File Podcast. By the way, at the top of the show, this week's guest Slater is a fellow by the name of Richard Burrell. He's a broadcaster and also the founder of a company called VoxBox, which is the company that does those recordings you hear when you're on hold. Very interesting company indeed, and he's doing quite well with it. Thank you very, very much. You know those messages you hear, you know, for muffins, dial 3. Yeah, that kind of stuff. By the way, if you want to find out more information about VoxBox, you can go to the website, which is phonevoice.ca. That's phonevoice.ca. And if you're looking for voices on your own phone, you might want to even give them a call. I'll give you a toll-free number. 1-888-9-VOX-BOX. That's 1-888-9-VOX-BOX. And by the way, you can find all the information about everything that's on this show by going to my website, peteranthonyholder.com, and clicking on the links on the What's On page for this particular episode. And you'll find there, of course, the links for VoxBox. Okay, and thank you, Richard, for doing the slate this week. Let's get to the stuff, shall we? We start off with a story from New Brighton, Pennsylvania. A 20-year-old woman seems determined to earn her rightful spot in hell. Police say she put a forged $50 check in the offering plate and stole a woman's wallet from a pew at the First Presbyterian Church. Worse, the offending check was from a previously stolen checkbook. Worser, yeah, I know it's not a word, but stick with me. The suspect later used a credit card from the stolen wallet to buy $200 worth of merchandise from a dollar store and a convenience store. Worse yet, she's also allegedly tried to use a credit card that was stolen from another church to get a $16,000 cash advance that a bank refused to issue. Police are still looking for her. Judging by her track record, I think she'll be eventually easy to find, because she's also not very bright. And she's going straight to hell, by the way. Story from Idaho. An 87-year-old woman by the name of Violet Bishop was watching television when she thought she'd have a snack. So she decided to dig into the Halloween candy early and pick up a box of Milk Duds. But as she started to munch, she noticed one of the Milk Duds didn't seem as fresh as the others. She said, one was rather crunchy and I could not get it to soften up no matter how hard I tried. She finally took it out of her mouth only to discover it wasn't a milk dud after all. It was her hearing aid that had fallen out of her ear and into the box. Fortunately, there was no serious damage to the hearing aid or her teeth, but it cost her about $250 to have the hearing aid cleaned and repaired. Violet later told reporters, as much as I love my Halloween candy, I'll be sure to notice what I'm eating from now on. Wow, it only took you 87 years to figure that one out, dear. Slow learner. Anyway, let's talk about Darth Vader, shall we? Yes, the actor who played Darth Vader in the original Star Wars series is a fellow by the name of David Prowse. David is 74 years old now and just found himself the victim of a police raid after reports said that he was shooting a porn film in Staffordshire, England. Don't get concerned. It didn't really happen. Here's the situation. Nosy neighbors had apparently jumped to the wrong conclusion after seeing a camera and lighting equipment being taken into the bungalow. Instead of a hot, steamy porn scene, the police found the house filled with actors filming dialogue for a movie ironically called The Kindness of Strangers. The film is being directed by Deborah Hatfield and is about a widow trying to raise two difficult sons. So, there you go. Darth Vader in a porn film, that wouldn't go well anyway. I mean, as if the line, Luke, you are my son, isn't icky enough. Moving right along on the stuff file, let's talk about people who don't understand the concept of what it is not to be lewd, crude, and socially unrefined. In Sweden, a 48-year-old man is on trial for having sexually assaulted a female police officer following an interrogation for other alleged sex crimes. In court, this idiot actually said, "I wanted to commend her for shaking her rear end so nicely." After an interrogation, the man was being escorted back to his cell by two female officers, and while the three were waiting for the cell door to open, our friend suddenly reached out and grabbed a hold of one of the officer's buttocks. The police officer testified, "He grabbed me with a rather large hand and managed to grab the whole cheek. I felt violated and dirty." But the suspect told a shocked court that he was completely justified in his actions because the officer in question had been giving him long stares and he felt he had sort of gone on a date with her during their police car ride to the station and during the interrogation. Wow. Can we all say delusional together? Delusional. That's creepy. Okay, a couple of items I want to talk about dealing with school. Kevin Sharp, professor of Renaissance Studies at Queen Mary University in London, says he knows why today's college students leave school in so much debt. It's not the rising cost of tuition, it's their ridiculously lavish lifestyles. Writing in Higher Education magazine, Professor Sharp said today's students' lifestyles include smoked salmon sandwiches, cappuccinos, and iPods. Student homes are often equipped with large LCD TVs, high-end electronics, and designer furniture. Student coffee bars are crowded all day as students line up to consume four or five cappuccinos at nearly $4 a pop. He said last year he even spotted a handful of gold American Express cards. He concluded, "We should not ask our students to return to the fleabag dorm rooms of an earlier age, but a bit less luxury might mean a lot less debt." Well, he may have a point. Still with school, and some people who apparently can't accept responsibility for their own failings. So you find yourself a student at Texas A&M University and you fail three classes. Do you A, make a personal pact to study harder, B, transfer to a less challenging school, or C, sue the university? This is the stuff file. Which one do you think is the right answer? Student Jennifer Temple opted for the latter and is now suing her former university, claiming that an academic counselor recommended that she intentionally fail three classes. Temple says she wanted to drop the class, but her student advisor told her that she would lose her parents' health benefits if she did. And she claims the counselor told her she should fail the classes because of an A&M rule allowing freshmen to exclude as many as three grades of D, F, or U, for unsatisfactory, from their transcripts. So, Taking the advisor's advice, she quit attending classes thinking she could exercise the grade exclusion policy. But when she went to transfer to another school, she found that other colleges, like the University of Texas, would not accept the grade exclusions, and she was rejected because of the 2 F's and 1 D on her transcript. So she's suing to have her transcript changed and her legal fees paid for, and hopefully a change in the policy at A&M. Of course, Jen, maybe had mommy and daddy taught you to take responsibility for yourself, and you would have actually studied a little bit more, you wouldn't be in this position in the first place. Jen, you're a moron. And by the way, that doesn't make her the idiot of the day. That's coming up later. Stick around. On to Dublin. Irish parents struggling to buy school books and uniforms in the face of a deep recession may now have to worry about sending their children to school with a roll of toilet paper as well as a packed lunch. Pupils at a primary school in the southern county of Cork are being asked to bring their own toilet paper to school to help save money, one of the starkest examples yet of the death of Ireland's Celtic Tiger economy. The letter was sent out just as a way of balancing books here in the school and not intended as a demand, said Catherine O'Neill, principal of St. John's Girls National School. O'Neill said the request was made because of cuts of government grants for books and computers. She added that parents were responding well. I've done a quick tour of the classrooms this morning, and I'd say at least half the pupils have brought them in, them being, of course, their own rolls of toilet paper, she said to the national broadcaster RTE. I have no doubt that there are an enormous number of schools out there that are doing the same thing. Ick. Bringing your own toilet paper to school? I don't know. Now there's going to be a class struggle, I'm sure, because, you know, some people are going to bring 1 ply, some people are going to bring 2 ply. It'll be a whole class thing. What kind of toilet paper did you bring to school today? Yeah. Sticking with school, or at least a school theme, let's talk about a very popular television show that's on right now. On the line with us is Naya Rivera, who is one of the stars of the television show Glee, the hit television show that can be seen on Fox and also here in Canada on Global. She plays the role of Santana Lopez, who is one of the cheerleaders on the show, and of course she is one of the many accomplished singers that the program has. She's on the line with us right now from California. Hi, Naya, how are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks
for having me.
Thanks for being on with us. The show has come flying out of the gate. It's doing so well, and it started off with a sneak preview, a premiere in the summer, and now it's on a regular basis. Are you really surprised by the show's success and the buzz that it's received?
Yeah, I sort of am, but then again, I'm not at the same time. Just because, you know, we were so excited about the project, and every week getting the scripts and reading the storylines, we knew that we had something special, and we had a good feeling about it. And so we expected it to be kind of the hit that it is now, and it's just really good to know that everyone else enjoys it just as much as we enjoy working on it.
You know, everyone likes to pigeonhole shows, and when somebody says, oh, there's a television series that's coming on, and it involves a lot of singing and dancing, people like to look back in history to see what succeeded and what hasn't, and in television, not a lot has. And the first thing that comes up is, uh-oh, it's cop rock again.
Yeah, I hear that all the time. And I, like, didn't even know what cop rock was. And I did my research, and I'm like, this is nothing like Glee. But, yeah, we get a lot of comparisons to things like that. And, you know, the High School Musical question comes up all the time. But I think that people have really had a chance now to see that it is unlike anything that's ever been done before. And just because it does have some of those same elements, you know, singing and dancing in high school, doesn't necessarily make it a hit like a High School Musical or a failure like cop rock.
Right.
And I think that you really kind of have to make that judgment for yourself, and I think that they have.
The character you play on the show, as I mentioned, is Santana Lopez. She is one of the cheerleaders, and they're not the nicest girls in the group, the cheerleaders, and I'm just wondering if you've ever come across people like that in your real life.
Yeah, I definitely have. You know, I went to high school just like everyone else, and I had popularity issues with popular girls and whatnot. And, yeah, I have, but you know, I draw from that and put that into how I play my character, how I play Santana. And I guess you could say that that was a major blessing.
Does it worry you or concern you? Because, you know, sometimes people have a difficult time when you're out in public dividing an actor from their character. Are you concerned that people might think you're like Santana, which I'm assuming you are not?
Yeah, no. No, I'm not. I'm not like her. I'm not that rude. But I don't think that people would. I'm not concerned with that. I don't think that people would have a problem thinking that I'm like that in real life. I think that, you know, the show as a whole really pokes fun at the stereotypes of high school. I think that people get that. So I don't think that, you know, there isn't going to be any problem distinguishing me from Santana.
A show like Glee, an hour-long comedy, which has a lot of musical elements in it, a lot of production numbers, what's it like putting that show together on a weekly basis? It must be a very tight schedule.
It is. It's very tight. And we do cram a lot into a small amount of time. We have dance rehearsals and pre-records, and not to mention, you know, rehearsing scenes regularly like any other episodic television show. But it takes about 2 to 2.5 weeks to shoot each episode. And it's kind of more fun, I would say, because you do get to spend that extra time with each other learning choreography and singing together, and it's kind of like a bonding experience, so I'm glad it doesn't just fly by.
Now, you've been at this a long time. I understand that your first television show as a regular role was The Royal Family with Red Fox and Della Reese back when you were 5 years old. Did you always know this was something you wanted to do?
Yeah, pretty much. I've always been involved in the entertainment industry. And I've always, you know, been acting and singing, and it was pretty organic and pretty natural, and I feel like, you know, I've just been always doing this, and I'm really good at it, so why not stick with it?
Were you just one of those, when it comes to child actors, there's either the fearless child actor or the precocious child actor. Were you just fearless when you started doing this? I mean, working on a sitcom with a live studio audience and veteran performers, or were you even aware of what you were involved in at that tender age?
Well, I was definitely aware, just because, you know, I would always be running lines with my mom or getting headshots taken. So I was definitely aware of the process of it. And I think that I was pretty fearless, as most kids are at that age, no matter what they're involved in. And I think that's actually awesome. And I wish that I had some of that fearlessness now, being 22, just because it's weird how nerves creep up, you know, when you're older and you have a sense of how people perceive you, and I wish I didn't have that.
You've made the transition from child actor to adult actress. A lot of people don't have such an easy time, or let me rephrase that, did you have an easy time?
In that transition, no, I don't think it's easy. I don't think this business is easy for anyone, really, but especially for someone who's been doing it since they were little, you know. There's always a weird phase when you realize that you're not a cute little kid anymore that's just going to go in and make people smile and feel good. You really have to focus on your craft and really learn how to audition and kind of act all over again, and it takes a lot of self-confidence to do so. So it's awkward, but I'm glad that I got over that hurdle.
People who have followed your career, they followed it mostly in the realm of comedy, and you're working on a comedy now, but you've also had some dramatic roles as well. Most recently, you played a heroin addict on CSI Miami. What was that like?
That was an intense experience. I auditioned and, you know, totally threw myself outside of my box, and you know, she was initially a prostitute as well, so I went in dressed like a hooker and acted like I got electrocuted and I was high, and not really high, but I acted like I was high, and ended up booking it in on the set. It was such a great experience because I really got great feedback from everyone that worked on the show, and it really it surprised me, and I was impressed with myself that I was able to kind of stretch myself with my acting chops and do that. So I did love drama after that, but I definitely love comedy more than anything.
You are working on a hit show right now. What's it like working with the cast? Have you all gelled together?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're so close. I'm actually on my way to have dinner at Amber. She plays Mercedes at her house with a couple of the other Gleeks. And we always hang out and keep in touch. And I think it's awesome because it's kind of like, along with being on this awesome show, I've gained such good relationships with new people. And it's the best experience I could have ever asked for.
Do you think this could be a long run for you? And are you prepared for that?
You know what? I hope so. I heard that we reached the million download mark on iTunes today. So that seems like good news to me.
Yeah, that's...
And I am prepared. I'm prepared to work, and I hope it lasts for a really long time.
That's the other thing. The show came out in the summer for one episode, the pilot, and then people waited for the new season to start, but already the albums are coming out.
Yeah, they're already the album for the first season is on pre-order right now, and after every episode you can go on iTunes and download the songs from that episode, which I think is such a great bonus to the show. And people seem to really be taking on to that formula because, you know, like I said, a million downloads.
Well, not only is the show fun, but it is very, very addictive. So congratulations on what will certainly be a long-running hit. I thank you very, very much, Anaya, for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you so much.
Naya Rivera, one of the stars of Glee, which you can see on both Fox and here in Canada on Global. Check your local listings. You're listening to the Stuff File Podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
You're listening to the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that doesn't fly through the air like a communicable disease.
And still to come on this edition of the Stuff File Podcast, we'll meet Steve Truitt, the author of Stop Waiting for Permission. We'll also check the mailbag. We'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And we will have an idiot of the day. Plus, of course, lots and lots of stuff, including more stuff right here, right now. And let's talk about some justice for a legless man, shall we? 71-year-old Keith Brian Barry of Port St. Lucie, Florida, has no legs. He also got quite perturbed when he saw a very able-bodied woman park her brand new Nissan Altima in a handicap spot and then walk briskly inside a Walmart. And as you know on this show, all stories seem to lead to Walmart. Anyway, so Barry drove his motorized wheelchair over and keyed the car. Made a big massive scratch right down the side. All this was caught on surveillance videotape, of course. The car's owner, a 39-year-old woman, said she was there to pick up her handicapped mother and was in the store for about 30 minutes. After Barry was stopped while exiting the store, he made apologies to the store and the victim for what he called the most stupid thing he's ever done. He also admitted he didn't think of the possibility that the woman's mother was handicapped. Barry now faces a criminal mischief charge and was told he will be arrested for trespassing if he attempts to return to Walmart. So I guess in some cases, all stories don't lead to Walmart, because he can't go back. Okay, when a man hijacked a school bus in Atlanta, Georgia, the driver and the kids ran to the back of the bus and escaped out the rear window. One 16-year-old boy stayed to fight the hijacker, causing the bus to crash, and the man tried to escape out the same window. But by then, witnesses had surrounded the vehicle and beat up Aris Pittman, age 23, when he emerged and then held him for police. Said one witness, "I don't know what was going on in his mind and for him not to have no clothes on." But one of the men who held Pittman down for police noted he was wearing one item. He had a condom on. Safe sex, I guess. But on a school bus with kids? That just raises the ick factor, doesn't it? Ew. Okay, speaking of ick factor, a little vodka now and then can be fun and take the edge off. That's what I'm told. I don't drink, so I don't know, but people who drink tell me this. Too much vodka can get you into serious trouble. That I do know. I've seen that happen to other people in my life. And that's one thing a 27-year-old Swedish man found out. Our friend, who was identified only as Joel, says he has serious regrets about drinking a full bottle of vodka after waking up the next morning and finding a 6-inch tattoo of a male sex organ on his leg. Joel says he recalls very little about the evening, but his friends were more than happy to fill in the gaps. After hitting all the area nightclubs, he and his buddies went to a hamburger joint where Joel started rambling about his desire to get a drunken tattoo. Little did he know that the next booth was occupied by a tattoo artist who immediately expressed an interest in fulfilling Joel's wish just as long as he was given free rein to express himself fully on the drunken man's limbs. Joel and a friend took off with the stranger in a taxi. This story cannot possibly end well. You know that, right? Anyway, and the next morning he awoke with an X-rated leg. But this is why I like Joel. Rather than try to sue the guy, as many would, Joel said he has no hard feelings and takes responsibility for his own actions, saying, "It's not like he forced me." Well, at last, someone willing to take responsibility for their own actions, dumb as their actions might be. My hat's off to Joel, although he can no longer wear shorts. Anyway, let's get biblical to change the scope and direction of this program for a moment, shall we? You've heard of the King James Version. Now there's the Lego Bible. There's a new illustrated version of the Bible available online with more than 4,500 scenes depicting more than 400 Bible stories from Genesis to Revelations, all done in Legos. You can check it out on the website called thebricktestament.com. That's thebricktestament.com. And yes, you'll find a link in the What's On page on my podcast and blog as well. It's the ongoing project of one man, Brandon Powell Smith, nicknamed The Reverend, who ironically says he isn't at all religious, but he says his intent is to educate people about the Bible in a way that is fun and compelling while remaining true to the text of the scriptures. Amen. Amen. On to New Zealand for our next story, a strange Olympic story with a twist. The New Zealand Olympic Committee has threatened to sue a local Taekwondo athlete who plans to finance his 2012 London Games bid with the proceeds from a brothel. Logan Campbell, whose participation in the Beijing Olympics last year cost him about $150,000, most of which came from his parents, opened a brothel with a friend in Auckland earlier this year. Campbell went public with the scheme in July, and the 23-year-old said he hoped to raise $300,000 to alleviate any financial burden on his parents and to have more time to concentrate on training. After remaining silent on the issue for 3 months, the New Zealand Olympic Committee has written a letter to Campbell demanding he cease linking the Olympics to his business or face legal action. Based on the Olympic values of excellence, friendship, and respect, we would place your actions as totally inconsistent with these values. That's what was said in a signed letter by the NZOC Secretary General Barry Maister. Your open solicitation of clients for your business while using the Olympic or Olympian connection must cease immediately, or the NZOC will be forced to consider taking legal action against you. Campbell, who finished outside the medals in the featherweight division at Beijing, defended his business and fundraising efforts. Owning and running brothels is legal in New Zealand, where laws governing prostitution are relatively liberal by world standards. At the end of the day, says Campbell, I feel like I'm not exploiting anyone because no one has to be here. We are not forcing anyone to be here. They are all here on their own free will. Campbell is now threatening legal action of his own. Wow. Opening up a brothel to get funds for your Olympic bid. That brings new meaning to the Olympic slogan, doesn't it? Swifter, higher, stronger. Yes, yes indeed. Go for the gold. Anyway, time for our next guest here on the Stuff File podcast, and we do this interview via the wonderful world of Skype. On with us right now is Steve Truitt, who is a very, very busy man, And if you were to look at his resume, you would see that it's just loaded. He's also the author of a book entitled Stop Waiting for Permission. Steve, there are so many things that you do, and your book touches on that, that I have to start by asking you, just what did little Steve Truitt want to be when he grew up?
You know, it's funny you ask that, because I never knew. I always was interested in so many different things. From a very early age, I was interested in astronomy. I was a child of the moon race, and so I was very much into NASA, and indeed, I'm still a NASA historian. But I picked up a guitar at 13 and taught myself how to play, and I learned how to paint, and I've just always wanted to try everything. So I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up, really.
You mentioned you're into NASA, and I noticed in your bio material that you've actually had the opportunity to meet 4 moonwalkers.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I did. When about 4 years ago, I created a show on the internet called California Space and Technology News. And we, at the time, were the only media outlet going to space conferences. And they'd have them in California. They'd have them in Arizona, Florida, of course. And, you know, I was amazed that there was no other media outlets covering these space conferences. And so here are all these astronauts. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, of course, he goes everywhere. I met Pete Conrad 2 weeks before he died, actually, Alan Bean, and many other guys that no one else seemed to be interested in. I just couldn't figure it out. Why are these people not interested in these amazing people in history?
On the radio show I used to do, I had the chance to interview both Alan Bean and Harrison Schmitt.
Right.
And the thing I found so interesting about these guys who had been to the moon is just how down to earth they were.
You know what? I think Harrison Schmitt, they call him Jack Schmitt, actually.
He's
probably the most fascinating of them all, because he was the only man to walk on the moon that wasn't an astronaut. He was the first scientist on the moon. In fact, the last man to step on the moon. So very humble fellow, very nerdy guy, too.
Absolutely. But I want to get back to your book again, which is Stop Waiting for Permission. What made you decide to write this book?
You know, it's a couple of things. I was sitting in a restaurant with a friend of mine, and he's a screenwriter. We live in Hollywood. And he just kept saying, I'm waiting for someone to hire me. No one wants to hire me. He wrote one movie and then didn't hear from anybody after that. And I remember saying to him, listen, you can't wait for people to come to you. You have to start writing stuff and sending it out there. And that was really the first conversation that got me going on writing the book. At the time, I'd just been certified in neurolinguistic programming and hypnotherapy, and I was taking on life coaching clients. And I thought, you know, maybe it's just time to write a book. And then, of course, my next thought was, everybody says that. Few people do it. And so if you're really going to say something like that, especially out loud, you better do it. Lucky enough, at the time for me, I was shooting a show where I had to travel all around the country. And so I spent hours and hours and hours on airplanes writing this book. New York to LA was my favorite flight because I could get 5 hours of writing in. And so a lot of the book was written on airplanes.
The airlines are going to be asking for a cut, are they?
Yeah, they probably will, but I'm going to take it out of my food allowance that they don't get paid.
Well, again, the title, very interesting, Stop Waiting for Permission. Is that something you think we as a society tend to do? And is that something we do more so here in North America than in other places?
Yes and yes, more so than ever, and definitely in North America. I am convinced that, you know, and our television-fed society just wants things now and wants them simple and wants them quickly and has lost the art of knowing how to work for things and to get and to earn what you deserve. And, you know, we see people in the media who seem to have instant fame, and some of them do, and we think, well, that's what I want. And we've lost the art of learning how to work for things. And so we're waiting for everybody to give us what we think we want. And I think that's not necessary. I think we have to start doing it ourselves.
Do you think it's a situation where people are, as you say, looking for the fame as opposed to the passion of doing what it is they possibly could enjoy?
It's a great question. You know, I'm not sure people really even know. I think, you know, in the book, I talk about American Idol. And I use that example of how these kids show up at this audition thinking that they're going to be famous, and they can't sing at all. And that's the best part about the first part about the show, is the first few weeks, it's just these these kids who have such high ambition but just horrible voices. It's made a mockery of on the show. But the truth is, it's really sad because they don't know who they are. They think they want to be a star. They know they want to be a star. And they think they can get there by doing something that they've never done before, which is perform well. And they don't really know who they are. And my motto is, know yourself, don't know yourself. The second no is N-O, which means don't talk yourself out of being who you really are just to pursue something that's not right for you.
Do you also find, because you use the American Idol analogy, do you also find the same thing happens right through schools in the United States and Canada when it comes to sports? Everyone thinks they're going to be the next basketball star, the next football star, hockey star, baseball star.
Yeah, but I see it a little bit different there. The thing about sports that I love is that you still have to work for it. And in working for it, if you're not good enough, you know. The other guy next to you is going to get the position. He's going to get a spot on the team. If you're on the bench, then you know that you're probably not measuring up. And also, in I don't know if it's the same way in Canada, but in the United States, for the most part, at least college, football players have to finish college before they enter into the NFL. And so they have something to fall back on. And a lot of our football players here are business graduates who start businesses. John Elway is a perfect example of that.
Well, again, sticking with the American Idol analogy, there's a situation where we've seen played out on that show and some other shows that deal with talent competitions where people realize that they don't have to win to be very, very successful. Is that sending the wrong message?
You know, well, yes is the easy answer. I have two children. One is four and one is one. And I've seen somewhere where every kid gets a trophy instead of the best kid.
Oh, don't get me started on that topic.
Yeah, I haven't necessarily seen it firsthand with my child, but my wife and I are very cognizant of teaching my daughter that you don't always succeed, but if you always try, then you're a winner because you're always trying. And that's the point. Success is not the point. It's trying. It's going for it. That's the point.
And sometimes failure is the best success.
Well, look at penicillin. Penicillin was the result of failure. You know, Thomas Edison went through 1,000 different versions of the light bulb till he got it right. You know, we're so afraid of failure. I don't know why. I still have. I mean, I think about everything. I analyze everything. It drives my friends nuts. But you know, I'm still trying to figure out why we're so afraid of failure. It's so important.
We are talking with Steve Truitt here on the podcast, and I wanted to talk a little bit also about some of the television work you've done because you do a lot of that too.
I have been really lucky. I started in Los Angeles back in 92 on radio doing traffic for the local radio station here. And my very first job was reporting on the LA riots. I just moved to town 3 months earlier. So I'm thinking, what am I doing in this crazy city? It's on fire. They're rioting, gunshots and helicopters. And I was talking about it. And I just through that natural course, I was able to get into TV and I got an agent and got a couple of really good quality television shows that I'm really proud of, mostly science-based, actually. And in the latest one that's actually running right now on the Science Channel is called Cool Stuff and How It Works. It's still out there.
Now, I started off by asking you what you wanted to be when you grew up. I'll end off by asking you, with all the things you've done, is there something that you haven't done yet that you're dying to do?
Yeah, I really want to combine the two things that I feel that I was meant to do, which is being on camera and helping others. My whole modus operandi is being contribution. And I'm working toward that goal. My goal is to have a television show that reaches people and really helps them. And I do that right now with parenting classes that I teach here in the South Bay of California. And I have life coaching clients. And I do television work that I'm proud of. So I just want to combine that and have a show that helps people and helps them grow.
The book is called Stop Waiting for Permission, and also you can take a look at Steve's website, which is stevetruittcoaching.com. Steve, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be in our program.
Peter, what an honor it was to be on your show. Thank you so much. Really great talking to you.
Steve Truitt, author of Stop Waiting for Permission. Again, his website is www.stevetruittcoaching.com. That's www.stevetruittcoaching.com. stufffile.com. You're listening to the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
We have just a couple of items in this edition of the mailbag. We start off with an email that came in from a guy named Peter. Gotta love that name, Peter. Yeah. Anyway, he goes on to write, really missed your show. Can now listen to it on a memory stick, on portable radio. Guess who's falling asleep with you? You know, a lot of people used to listen to the show and fall asleep to the program when it was on late night. And even though it's a podcast now, people still tell me they listen to the show late at night. I guess old habits die hard. Anyway, great website and nice to hear the Stuff File. And nice to hear your voice again. Best of luck. And P.S., this is one podcast I would pay to hear regularly or subscribe to. Well, that's flattering and that's nice. I thank you for your kind words, Peter. I appreciate that you enjoy the podcast and hope that you keep listening. As you know, you can subscribe to it on iTunes in addition to getting it from my blog or website. I'm hoping to build up an audience so that I can perhaps get a sponsor for the show. I would prefer to go that route rather than to have people pay for the subscription, although that concept is not out of the question. It's just not preferred. To that end, I would appreciate that you can perhaps play a small part and get the word out to everybody you know. If more people spread the word, then the audience can grow organically. That's all I can hope for at this point. After that, I can then perhaps get some sort of sponsorship. Again, thanks for listening. It's much appreciated.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we have a message from Andrew. This one came in via Facebook. Hey, Peter, very excited about the new podcast. I've signed up on iTunes, and I'm going to write a review. You should encourage your fans to do this as well. Great to hear that wonderful stuff again. Your consummate fan, Andrew. Well, Andrew, I thank you too for your kind words, and I will take your suggestion to heart and ask everyone who is listening to this and has subscribed on iTunes that they too can write a review on the iTunes website, and that would be much appreciated. There you go. You're listening to the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Still to come, Idiot of the Day, more stuff, and of course, Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Stay tuned.
This is the Stuff File. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve-O-Reno?
Oh, I'm happy as a pig, and you know what? I mean, this is just a wonderful time of year. It's autumn.
Ah,
the
yes.
Leaves are about to change.
Mm-hmm.
The sun is shining in the daytime.
Yes.
I'm starting to sound silly now, aren't I?
Yes, you are, Steve.
How are you, Peter?
I'm doing very well. Doing very well.
Okay, that's it. I'll talk to you soon. Here we are, another show. Boy, where are we now? This is... Podcast 0005, I think, isn't it?
Actually, no, Steve. It's 0006.
Well, what do you mean, six? Did you... The last one we did was four.
Yeah, the last one you were on was 0004, but this is 0006.
Okay, I was not a math major, but I believe the difference... There's something missing there, okay?
That would be...
Six does not come after 0006. Does not come after 0004. What's the deal?
Well, because 0005 was an extra one that I did after 0004, so it was two in the same week. You see, so that's.
Are you telling me you didn't call on me?
Well, I figured, you know, once a week I was pushing my luck. I mean, you're a busy correspondent covering all of the state of Missouri, and, you know, this is a humble little podcast.
You missed me out. You missed out.
Yeah.
You left me out. You just tossed me aside. You didn't give me a chance to cash in on those vast sums of money that you pay me to do this.
Steve, do you want me to roll your tirade music now?
We'll wait. Fine.
Okay.
Fine.
Okay.
fine.
But I
be that way.
But I'm getting a taste of your anger from later on.
Oh, and I will be frustrated later on. You just wait and see.
Oh, okay, sir. Well, before
we turn to page A8, you'll find out.
Before we get to your tirade, what do you have for us this week?
Okay, let's see. Dateline, Brunswick, Ohio.
Oh no, Ohio! I can hardly wait to say goodbye.
That'd be the Buckeye State.
I used to live there, you know.
Yes, I know.
Well, let me tell you a story out of Brunswick, Ohio. And I didn't ever live in Brunswick. I lived in Columbus.
Right.
But Ohio, it's all the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The owner of a party store in the Cleveland area was terrified, I tell you, when a robber came in and demanded money. Then he recognized the robber. It was the barber two doors down. Now, when he told the robber he knew who he was, the robber allegedly grabbed the store's cash register and ran like the dickens.
Yes.
Now, the victim did... The dickens, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The victim didn't have to give a description to the investigating police officer. The same barber cuts the officer's hair. I love that. Anyway, the officer went to the barber's house next door to the Brunswick police station, I might add, to get the story. Apparently, he bought a beef stick, and it got him and his dog sick.
What?
Yeah, so apparently that's why he robbed the place. They got the dog sick, it got him sick. Okay, here's a question I have. Why were the two of them, the guy and the dog,
yeah,
eating the same beef stick?
You got a good point there. Yeah.
This is just wrong, okay? It's un-American as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it just shouldn't happen. That's all there is to it.
And I'm sure the headline in the paper says something to the effect, "Barber gets clipped."
Let's move on, shall we?
Okay.
Dateline, Akron, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye.
Oh, there's that music again, and it's still the Buckeye State.
Still a state in which I used to live.
And one you hated, if I remember.
I hated living there. It's a year of my life I'll never get back.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know what other state's next door? Pennsylvania's next door.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
An Ohio man said he... I have no idea why he said that.
I don't...
An Ohio
I don't...
man said he... what's that?
I don't know either.
it's an inside joke.
Okay.
Anyway, an Ohio man said... An Ohio man said he chipped away loose material to prepare a pothole for repair and thought he was helping the city, not breaking the law. An undercover police officer spotted 81-year-old James Stacy in the street near Stacy's home with a pickaxe and a broom. Stacy said he cleared the 3-foot-wide hole because he expected a crew to patch it and wanted the patch to last just a little bit longer. Anyway, Public Works Manager Paul Barnett said that he always liked to do that kind of cleaning, but he said it created a greater safety hazard until the hole was patched. So Police Sergeant Stacy said, you know, we got to charge these people with criminal damaging. And why? Well, because he destroyed fresh asphalt and ignored an officer's warning. You can't do that in Ohio. Stacy denies that, by the way. He's scheduled in court to have a sentence that could get him into jail for up to 90 days.
Wow.
90 days.
You say an undercover police officer?
Yeah.
That's what they're doing now? Catching little old men digging up the road to help repair it?
Yeah, apparently that's what they're doing because,
wow,
quite frankly, the revenues are good. You know, it's like police officers sitting on the side of the road. Instead of going out and protecting people from murder, mayhem, and rape, they're trying to generate revenue for their small towns.
Mm. I'm going on the assumption that there is absolutely no other crime in Akron.
That's got to be it.
Yeah, yeah.
Akron begins with which letter is that? A, which also is the first letter for armpit.
Okay.
Let us move on.
You did, apparently.
Akron, by the way, is the rubber capital of the world. You know that?
I did know that, yes.
Well, it used to be. I don't know if it still is.
Yeah.
Firestone was there.
Right.
See?
Yep.
Dateline. We're just going to move on here. Dateline, Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh, that's the volunteer state.
I never lived there.
Not yet.
Now, you know you live in a small town when the main topic of discussion on the local radio talk show is that somebody left a mattress on the side of the road.
I worked a town like that.
Yeah, I know you did.
Yeah.
It was called Brockville, wasn't it?
Oh, Lord, yes, it was.
Yeah. Morning show radio host Dale Deason. I bet you that's not his real name.
I'm guessing.
No, Dale Deason, it's like a Steve Walsh, you know? Is that a real name?
Yeah,
it is. Write me a check, and I'll see if it cashes, okay? Anyway, Dale Deason spotted a mattress discarded along the side of the highway on his way to work from Hooterville.
Come rambling the train that is going down the tracks to the junction.
Junction, Petticoat Junction. This is near Chattanooga, by the way.
Yep.
By the way, Petticoat Junction is a little place called Eldon, Missouri, which is about, half an hour from where I live.
Mm-hmm.
That is Petticoat Junction.
Okay. Cool.
Next time you're in this part of the country, folks, drop into Eldon, Missouri, and... Who's in there? What's her name?
Uncle Joe, Aunt B.
Uncle Joe? Yeah, that's right. He's moving kind of slow.
Yeah.
where were we here? Dale Deason, yes. He suggested on the air that somebody with Public Works might want to pick it up. The mattress, that is.
Right.
But several days later, it was still there, and it appeared that work crews had mowed the grass around the mattress rather than actually moving it off the road. Dale finally got someone from the Public Works Department to join him on the air who said they were on the job.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah, being on the job in these places, this one here is Chattanooga, Tennessee, or Hooterville, being on the job means you don't really do much, but you do draw a salary.
Yep.
Yeah. Statewide, Madison, Wisconsin.
Ah, that's the Badger State.
Or as we like to call it.
The Cheese State.
Where the motto is.
If it's cheddar...
it's better. A Wisconsin tourism lobbying group is changing its name after realizing its initials formed a crude acronym. The Wisconsin Tourism Federation group did a quiet rebranding back in July, changing its name to the Tourism Federation of Wisconsin and updating its logo to TFW from WTF after it was featured on websites and blogs which were poking fun at it. It had no way of knowing 30 years ago that the letters would go on to take such a crude association.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, yes. You saw that one coming when I said Wisconsin Tourism Federation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, where are we going here? Dateline, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Still the Badger State.
Still we like to call it what?
The Cheese State.
With a modest what?
If it's cheddar.
It's better.
Yep.
Yeah. Kevin Ollie, who's 17. That's right, Ollie. Kevin Ollie is 17 and Damian Cole is 19. They completely failed in their attempted street robbery in Milwaukee in August when they accosted a young man and a woman. The male victim drew his own gun, shot Ollie fatally, and held Cole for the cops. Later, Cole, though not the shooter, was charged with Ollie's death under the state's felony murder rule, which makes felons responsible if anyone at the scene should die as a result of the crime, even though it's his accomplice.
Hmm.
Cole could get 55 years on the joint.
Boy, bet he's mad.
Well, not as angry as I might get sometimes, and when I do, you know what I do when I get angry?
I think we previewed this earlier.
I grab keyboard in hand, and I type a two-minute tirade.
And what are you tirading about?
Peter, it is time for my two-minute tirade. Tonight, I want to talk about websites. That's right, websites. Not all websites, but some of them. You know, when I start reading something on a site, I do not want to be told to click here to continue reading. Folks, it's the web. There are no space limitations, okay? Who do these guys think they are? Newspapers? You know, back in the day when newspapers were important, they would try to cram 8 or 10 stories onto the front page, give you just enough to whet your appetite, then force you to turn to page B15 to continue reading the story. There was a reason for that. Space limitations. There was no room to put full stories on page 1, so there was a need to turn the page, so to speak, to get to more of what you wanted to read. With the web, there is no limitation. No limitation. There's no reason to just, you know, not just put everything in one place. So, I ask you this. Why, if I'm reading a story, do I have to click to read more? There is no earthly reason to click here. Put the whole story on the same page and don't force me to take an extra step. You know, if you're writing a blog or an online column, keep in mind you are not writing for a newspaper. I face the same thinking with the MissouriNet blog, which I write, by the way. Some of the powers that be suggested it would look better if I only included a paragraph or two and had people go elsewhere to finish what they started. I fought and I won. It's the web. There's no space limitation and no reason, Peter, to click here.
Well, you mean there? It's a bottomless pit?
It's a bottomless pit. It doesn't stop.
You mean this?
It's like the federal treasury here in the U.S.
You mean this podcast can last out there forever?
I think it will last forever. It will last as long as there are birds flying in the sky, as long as there are fish swimming in the sea, as long as there are good people living in Missouri.
Elsewhere. I just felt like I stepped into a John Steinbeck novel.
Yeah, I know. And will it be Cannery Row? I don't think so.
In any case, people can find out more information.
You mentioned the blog.
You mentioned the blog, and people can find out more information at www.missourinet.com. That's www.missourinet.com. We're running out of time. As a matter of fact, we're over time.
So, fine. Great. Just make me feel rotten again. Wonderful.
Then you wonder why you weren't on 0005. Gosh.
Yeah, I think so. I've been a bad person today.
Yes.
I'll just hang up and say, should I say those three magic words, Peter?
I was getting there.
Oh, okay, say it.
Say those three magic words.
Hit the theme!
This is the Stuff File.
And we're just about done with this edition of the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. This, of course, is 0006. Almost out of time, which means we have one more story for you in the Stuff File, and that, of course, would be the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
We go to Albertville, Alabama. An Alabama woman has been charged with endangering the welfare of a child after police say she let her daughter ride in a cardboard box on top of their van. Albertville Police spokesman Sergeant Jamie Smith said the 37-year-old woman was arrested after police received a call about a minivan on a state highway with a child riding on top. Smith said the woman told police the box was too big to go inside the van and that her daughter was inside the box to hold it down. Smith said the mother told officers it was safe because she had the box secured to the van with a clothes hanger. Okay, so if it was safe and supposedly secured with a clothes hanger, and both you and I know that ain't safe, then why would she feel the need to put her daughter in the box in the first place? The 13-year-old girl wasn't harmed and was turned over to a relative. A jail worker said the mother was out on bond as of last Monday. So, we ask the rhetorical question, why would someone put a 13-year-old child in a box on top of a minivan and then drive on the highway? Why? One reason and one reason only. She's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. The website is peteranthonyholder.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding date and podcast number. In this case, the podcast number is 0006. Email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter. The Facebook account, facebook.com/PAHolder. Twitter is twitter.com/PAHolder. Drop me a line if you like. Send me something. You can put in the mailbag. Don't forget, you can find this podcast on my website, on my blog, and also as a subscription on iTunes. And please tell all your friends, get the word out so we can make this podcast bigger and better. Just like the Olympic banner, huh? Right. That's it. We'll see you on the next Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Until then, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.
Thank you.